religious freedom never includes the freedom to harm other people.
You must remember, this is a people that has no culture and has never had one.
He's got this incredible body of work, from serious political essays back to historical novels about the founding fathers to quirky novels like Kalki. And, you know, there's so much there. It's something for everyone.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A mob lynches a gay man in Ghana and hunts for his boyfriend. A religiously weakened Enda draws U.S. activists' fire. And a filmmaker documents the United States of Gore Vidal. All that and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Natalie Peoples.
And I'm Jason Proctor.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 31st, 2014. Private, consensual adult homosexual acts are a relatively minor offense in the West African nation of Ghana. Convictions call for a maximum sentence of 3 years in prison. But local media are reporting that a gang of youth lynched a gay man in the Muslim-dominated Accra suburb of Nima this week and are hunting for his lover. That man barely escaped a similar fate, but was tipped off by relatives that the mob of around 30 young men was coming for him. He's now in hiding. It all apparently began when two youths confronted the men and accused them of flaunting their relationship in public. There was a brief scuffle. The two youths then left and gathered the mob, which broke into the home of one of the men, stripped him naked, and lynched him. Police say it's unlikely that anyone who participated will be prosecuted because possible witnesses would be reluctant to talk. Police Inspector Kwadwo Osei said that they don't see it as helping in investigations. They see it as snitching. And that community frowns upon snitching.
But the tiny European nation of Luxembourg has moved one step closer to opening civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples. Parliament's Legal Affairs Committee approved a marriage equality bill this week, sending it to the full body for a vote that's expected within the next few weeks. According to a survey conducted last year, 83% of the people in Luxembourg support the idea. If the proposal becomes law, Luxembourg would become the 11th European country to sanction the civil marriages of same-gender couples, joining Belgium, Denmark, France, Iceland, the Netherlands, Norway, Portugal, Spain, Sweden, and the UK. The Luxembourg bill also extends adoption rights to married gay and lesbian couples. The country has already made history with its openly gay Prime Minister, Xavier Bettel, and openly gay Deputy Prime Minister, Etienne Schneider, who are both now serving at the same time.
Meanwhile, the anti-gay U.S. National Organization for Marriage asked the nation's Supreme Court this week to stop the civil marriages of same-gender couples in Oregon. A May 19th ruling by District Judge Michael McShane struck down the state's constitutional ban on those marriages. After state officials chose not to defend the ban, McShane denied the request by the National Organization for Marriage to intervene, ruling that the group had no legal standing to do that. The organization's request to stop the Oregon nuptials will be reviewed by Justice Anthony Kennedy, who oversees legal questions involving that area of the country. He wrote the High Court's June 2013 Windsor ruling that overturned a statute that banned federal recognition of legally married same-gender couples, and the 2003 Lawrence v. Texas opinion that struck down state sodomy laws. The American Civil Liberties Union is nevertheless joining the legal team that fought for marriage equality in the state. ACLU legal director Stephen Shapiro told the Oregonian newspaper that, "We're not taking anything for granted. We haven't at any point in this case, and we're not doing it now."
The National Organization for Marriage already got some bad news this week. The Maine Commission on Governmental Ethics and Election Practices imposed the largest fine in state history on the group for failing to register as a political action committee during the 2009 campaign to repeal Maine's marriage equality law. The fine of more than $50,000 also cites the group's failure to file campaign finance reports. The Commission's decision requires the National Organization for Marriage to register retroactively and release its financial reports, including the names of its donors. The group has refused to make that list public, claiming that it would subject those donors to harassment. Under Maine law, groups must register if they raise or spend more than $5,000 to influence a statewide ballot question. Ethics investigators said that the National Organization for Marriage gave nearly $2 million to Stand for Marriage Maine, which paid for more than 60% of that group's expenditures. The Portland Press Herald reported that the ruling would become official at the commission's next meeting, after which the National Organization for Marriage will have 30 days to appeal in Maine Superior Court. Fred Karger, the California gay activist and former Republican presidential hopeful who filed the original complaint, told the newspaper that the National Organization for Marriage definitely picked the wrong state to break the law.
The Employment Non-Discrimination Act, or ENDA, is a bill in Congress to federally ban workplace discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Most Americans falsely believe that such protections already exist. There have been many attempts to pass various versions of ENDA since 1974. And the latest version easily passed in the democratically controlled U.S. Senate late last year in a bipartisan vote of 64 to 32. But it's unlikely to even see the light of day in the Republican-dominated House. Some want LGBT anti-bias provisions to become a part of the country's civil rights laws rather than as standalone protections. But religious freedom is now the new mantra of groups opposed to equality. And a growing number of LGBT advocacy groups are charging that the language in the current version of ENDA goes well beyond the exemptions of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to allow religious institutions and religiously affiliated hospitals, schools, and other entities to blatantly discriminate. The Human Rights Campaign, the country's largest LGBT advocacy group, still supports ENDA as proposed, but statements issued this week by Lambda Legal, the American Civil Liberties Union, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, the Transgender Law Center, Freedom to Marry, Get Equal, and Queer Nation each complain that the broad religious exemptions in the bill amount to a license to discriminate. CEO Lori Jean of what's now known as the Los Angeles LGBT Center eloquently addressed the issue at the center's recent Evening with Women event.
Remember that law in Arizona that was allowing individuals doing business with the public to refuse to serve LGBT people simply by asserting their own religious beliefs? Wedding photographers, restaurants, hospitals. After national outrage, that law was vetoed. But now similar ones are being proposed and passed in states around the country. Even our own Employment Non-Discrimination Act, the only federal law currently being considered to protect us, includes a broad religious exemption. It was put into ENDA 8 years ago in an express attempt to weaken it. It does not belong there today. It must be removed. We must remind ourselves and others of this very basic principle, one that is key to our democracy and that is certainly key to liberty and justice for women and for LGBT people. Religious freedom never includes the freedom to harm other people.
Los Angeles LGBT Center CEO, Lori Jean.
We told you last week about the election to the South African Parliament of Zakele Mbele, who became the first openly gay black elected official in Africa. And this week, Jacob Zuma, considered to be the most socially conservative South African president since 1994, appointed the country's first openly gay or lesbian cabinet minister. Lynn Brown, who previously served as the premier of the Western Cape province, is South Africa's new Minister of Public Enterprises. The black politician is not a high-profile campaigner for LGBT rights, but observers call her appointment as the highest-ranking out politician on the continent significant and worth drawing attention to. Civil marriage was opened to same-gender couples in South Africa in 2006, and the country recently ended its ban on gay men donating blood. But homophobic violence, especially against perceived-to-be lesbian women, remains a serious problem. Critics say that the government is not doing enough to fight the increasing incidence of so-called corrective rape, especially in the townships.
But finally, one of Latin America's most socially conservative and heavily Roman Catholic countries, Peru, now has its first openly gay lawmaker. 57-year-old Lima Congressman Carlos Bruce, a longtime campaigner for civil unions for same-gender couples, came out in a front-page interview with the El Comercio newspaper this week. "I've always been reluctant to talk about my private life and the things I do in my bed," he said. "It seems tacky." He said he'd spoken with his two now adult sons prior to going public and that they supported his decision. "Many believe that I am unable to be a good father or that in being gay I cannot serve my country," he said. "However, I've done it for 12 years. It is an opportunity to break those stereotypes." His honesty was generally applauded, but it also drew death threats and critical comments on Peruvian social media outlets. One Facebook user wrote, "It's disgusting. Kill him." But reflecting the generational divide on LGBT rights that seems to know no borders, one of Bruce's sons told reporters that, "In my circle of friends, there's no problem. On the contrary, they congratulate him."
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 31st, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Natalie Peoples.
And I'm Jason Proctor.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Extra.
Have you checked our website lately? For now playing information and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, log on to thiswayout.org.
We'll hear about the elegant, acerbic, all-around man of letters who presided with a certain relish over what he declared to be the end of American civilization later in the program. The Lady Gaga generation is well on its way, and This Way Out queer life and literature commentator Janet Mason found their voices, along with guidance for the people who are raising them.
It has been said that children are our future. This is exactly why we should be concerned about LGBT children and teens, and in fact with any kids who are different in any way. I was strongly reminded about this with two new books that recently came across my desk. Heal This Way, A Love Story, Hot Glue Press, 2013, written by the Little Monsters, a name for Lady Gaga fans, derived in part from her song titled The Fame Monsters, and photographed by Tracy B. Wilson, is a rare gem of a book conceived by Wilson. As she explains in the preface, in the winter of 2013, Lady Gaga had to cancel the remainder of her concert tour. On the weekend that was to be the Born This Way Ball at Madison Square Garden, little monsters from around the world gathered in New York City to celebrate their love and devotion to Lady Gaga and to the community that she has given them. Knowing how anxious they were to let Mother Monster know that they loved her no matter what, I had an idea. A sign-up sheet, three tweets, and 100 little monsters later, Heal This Way was born. The result is a profoundly touching collection of color photographs and letters, many of them handwritten. One fan writes about how Lady Gaga has changed her life. "Probably the biggest way that she had impacted me would have to be helping me accept that I'm a lesbian. Before her Born This Way, I felt ashamed and longed for something to make me feel proud of this part of my identity. I haven't come out to my family. I'm not sure if I ever will. I'm terrified of how they would react if they knew. I have come out to my friends, and I'm definitely more open about it to other people, and I have Gaga to thank for that." To read Heal This Way was, for me, a baby boomer lesbian, and in full disclosure, a Lady Gaga fan, extremely empowering. In the words of one little monster, "You have inspired us to follow our dreams and to try our hardest at things people say we can't do." When I picked up Coming Around, Parenting Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Kids by Ann Dalrymple, New Horizon Press, 2012, I was surprised to see that it was addressed to straight adults of my generation. But then it made perfect sense. These are the majority of people parenting the next generation, and they need help. Coming Around offers help by explaining what being LGBT means, and then acting as a guide for how to be tolerant, accepting, and to lovingly guide LGBT children into adulthood. She offers the advice for the liberal and conservative parent of what to say when a child comes out to them. Her basic advice is to tell the child, who may be a young adult, that you love him or her, not that you love them despite the fact that they are LGBT, and that you are glad that she or he told you. I look forward to the day when mockery of LGBTQs is viewed as socially repugnant. Until that day comes, there are always bridges that can allow passage from the worldview to another. Stand up for your child by interrupting gay jokes that occur in your presence. Listen to your child's insights and perceptions. By valuing his or her experiences, you build the bridge that maintains your connection. Coming Around also offers a sound device of getting to know your child's partner and includes sections on marriage equality, same-sex parenting, and becoming a grandparent. While the advice that Coming Around offers may just sound like common sense, the fact is that this information is not common knowledge in the dominant culture. Coming Around is the kind of book that could change an entire family's experience of life. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
Heal This Way, written by Little Monsters and photographed by Tracy B. Wilson, is published by Hot Glue Press. Coming Around, Parenting Lesbian, Gay, and Transgender Kids by Ann Dorenwend is from New Horizons Press.
You wrote United States of Amnesia. Why?
That's a good title. You must remember, this is a people that has no culture and has never had one.
The United States of Amnesia is such a good title, a new film about the inimitable Gore Vidal is using it too. More about that in a minute. Vidal rarely commented about gay life, but made an exception during this 2008 interview with Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman.
As we sat in Gore Vidal's living room, I asked him about his long-term companion and their home, which they shared for decades in Hollywood Hills. When did you meet Howard?
1950.
You were with him for over half a century.
Yeah.
What is the secret to a long relationship?
Oh, no sex. You can't tell Americans that because they think everything is sex because they're so beautiful and vital and, you know, full of joy, which they want to spread around. And I've always thought that there's nothing that can destroy a friendship as much as sex. So would you rather have a friend, or you can always get sex out there in the dark?
How do you want to be remembered?
I don't give a goddamn.
A film documentarian does give a damn how Vidal is remembered. This Way Out, Steve Pride chatted with Nicholas Rathall about his award-winning examination of Vidal's political life. It's opening this month in select U.S. theaters and is available on VOD.
No 20th century figure had a more profound effect on the worlds of literature, film, politics, historical debate, and the culture wars than Gore Vidal. And Nicholas Rathall's new documentary, Gore Vidal, The United States of Amnesia, paints a fascinating portrait of this groundbreaking gay writer and icon of the American left.
My name's Nicholas Rathall. I'm the director of Gore Vidal, The United States of Amnesia.
What's the film about?
It's mostly about his sort of public persona and his critical sort of analysis of American culture and politics in the second half of the 20th century. It also covers a little bit about his writing, his personal life, his background.
Why this man? Why Gore Vidal?
I was really motivated around 9/11 when Gore was writing a lot of pamphlets against America's entry into the Middle East and their reaction to 9/11. His pamphlets, Dreaming War and Blood for Oil, motivated me to see that there was somebody speaking clearly against the drums of war. And after that, I got to meet Gore a couple of years later through his nephew, Burr Steers, who's a good friend of mine. And, you know, I spoke to Gore a lot about politics and current situation, and it just seemed like a great opportunity to be able to get close to someone like this in the later years of his life, and an opportunity we couldn't miss. So Burr and I started speaking to him about making a film, and it sort of organically grew from there. He was at the time selling his house in Italy, and so that kind of pushed us into action, and I rushed out to Italy and filmed him in Ravello closing down his house, and it unrolled from there.
So you were drawn in politically, but what about his writing?
Up until that point, I'd really only read a lot of his essays and his pamphlets, so I hadn't read his novels. After that, I started at the beginning and read Burr and then Lincoln and then made my way through most of his novels. And I guess the politics and the sort of historical analysis and the Founding Fathers stuff is what interests me most. I'm kind of less excited about, you know, Myra Breckinridge and things like that, which are amazing and a great laugh. But I was always drawn in by the history and the politics.
But those books demonstrated his tremendous range as a writer.
Yeah, I mean, incredible range, incredible body of work. I love his plays, too. I don't know if you know, but probably Best Man has been revived like 5 times. And the Nixon play is amazing to read as well. And Visit from a Lonely Planet is a really weird, off-the-wall kind of play, too. I mean, yeah, he's got this incredible body of work, from serious political essays back to historical novels about the Founding Fathers to quirky novels like Kalki, and, you know, there's so much there. It's something for everyone.
One of the perks of doing a documentary on Gore Vidal is that he did a lot of television and on-camera interviews.
That's a big strength of the film, is having all that archival material. It sort of shows how prescient he was and how ahead of his time Gore always was in his thinking, and how courageous he was in being able to sort of meet head on the media interpretation and propaganda that we're all bombarded with. And Gore would dissect it and try and cut through to people's real motivations of why people were saying this or why they were moving in this direction. To me, the archive sort of builds up in the film and just shows how courageous he was, and how, again, you know, speaking truth to power, he's sorely missed now, I feel, because who's going to pick up the reins now and step into that position? I don't think there's anyone really in the media landscape that has that kind of insider knowledge and wit and just intellect to fill those shoes.
I think my biggest surprise in the film was Gore Vidal's take on John Kennedy.
Yeah, I mean, Gore was very close to the Kennedy family, mainly through Jackie O. But as you see in the film, he was very critical of Kennedy as president. He talks about the 1,000 days and goes through the disasters that Kennedy led the country through. Whereas I think that he's great at debunking myths, Gore, and I think he saw that the mythology around JFK is great for the country, in one sense, but he was happy to debunk it and just say, look, Kennedy was not a great president for this country at all. He was a great figure and great image, but he wasn't a great president. That's one of the interesting things about Gore, is he's able to critique both sides. You know, he's very bipartisan in that sense.
Tell me more about his politics.
His politics were very left-wing, very liberal, and he believed that people shouldn't be interfered upon by the government and by laws and the over-lawyering and over-control of government. He felt like people should really be left alone, and that people's private lives were their private lives, and that there was no business of government or law if they weren't hurting anybody else. And frankly, I think he was quite right and very liberal-minded, and it's a shame that we're being over-policed now.
In making this film and getting to know Gore Vidal, what was your biggest surprise about him?
I was amazed when I started speaking to Gore about the breadth of Gore's contacts and knowledge and the people he knew around the world, the people that sought him out. He seemed to know everybody. He was a bit of a Zelig character. He knew everybody from the second half of the 20th century around the world. It was amazing.
What do you want audiences to take away from your film?
Apart from being inspired to find out more about Gore and to read more of his work, the idea that this kind of public intellectual is gone now and that we need to be strong and courageous in speaking out, in speaking truth to power again, and that this kind of on-point criticism and dissection of the media needs to happen more and more. And this is something Gore was very good at. You know, he did it with his wit and his intellect, but was able to pull things apart and sort of get to the bottom of them, I think, in a very incisive way. And it's something that's missing in much of the media landscape. You know, I think Gore held a very privileged position of being able to appear on these major networks and major TV shows and still say pretty much whatever he wanted to.
In making such a meticulous examination of someone else's life, did it change yours?
It's given me more courage and more focus to pursue this type of subject. I've always been interested in left-wing politics, but seeing someone like Gore close up and getting to know him and going through all of the archives of him and reading essays and novels has really focused me and inspired me to work harder. I mean, see the amount of work that Gore did in his life, and I have no aspirations to achieve that, but it's really made me think that I have something to give and that we can all contribute.
Say we're in an elevator and you have one floor to tell me all about Gore Vidal. Go.
He is an iconic intellectual, great critic and writer who covers the American notion of empire and America's search for empire and critiques it and is sort of in favor of the small r republic of America rather than the empire.
This has been a conversation with documentarian Nicholas Rathall. Find more information about his film, Gore Vidal, The United States of Amnesia, online at gorevidaldocumentary.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Natalie Peoples, Jason Proctor, Janet Mason, and Steve Pride contributed program material, Lady Gaga performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Yavanna Foundation, the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, a bequest from the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our generous listeners for making this program possible. Log on to thiswayout.org to join our family of supporters, read news wrap transcripts, check out some special audio offers and pics of the crew, and find links to our blog, Facebook, and Google Plus pages. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WREK Atlanta, Georgia, KWTF Bodega Bay, California, 2XX Canberra, Australian Capital Territory, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.